Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes! Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Andrew Gundling, JJ Devaney. What's going on, man?
We're not talking about the World Cup. That's what's going on. Not in this pod, my buddy.
I know. This podcast sucks already.
This is going to be bad.
I want to talk World Cup.
This is a transitional.
We're forcing ourselves to not.
This is a transitional podcast where we embrace the less joyous side of football that we now must.
Come on. Ready? We got to. Let's actually get better. We just did a. We also have a podcast out right now, which kind of pays homage to this World Cup. We did that podcast. Can't talk. You know, this World Cup was great. We'll continue to reference it forever. But you know, the sport moves on, and we got to move on with it.
We got ready.
We can't get left behind.
We got to get ready for the domestic seasons in Europe.
Yeah, there's things happening.
Right. We got to do that. We've got to be. You know, we've got to get back and dip our toes back into MLS, which we've completely neglected.
We sure have.
And what's the best way to do a number of different footballing items? What's better than Wheel of Football?
Football.
It is the perfect way to get back into this because we can barely muster up the strength to think about non-World Cup related items right now. So the wheel forces us. For the uninitiated, I guess, the Wheel of Football, it's very simple. We have this big wheel in front of us, similar to that of what you'll see on Wheel of Fortune.
Well, it's exactly the same.
Oh.
It was built at great expense. It's a bit gaudy, and we store it here at the ABC building.
Yeah. And we bring it in here every once in a while. A team of people, a forklift really, has to move it in here. And on each triangular piece, there's a different soccer-related topic. There's a lot of different topics. There's even, I saw on this wheel, there's actually some names, which I can only assume is that of guests that are all just standing by just in case.
Again, very, very over the top, very ostentatious, and yes. Very annoying for the people who don't get picked.
Yeah, I know. They're just waiting and waiting for a phone call that will never be answered. So here we go. I've got the wheel in front of me.
Let's do it.
You ready for the first spin?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And, oh.
Premier League transfers.
Ooh.
All sorts of Premier League things have happened.
Here we go. We're diving right into the pool. We're right back in.
All right. Well, we deal with the big news today.
Yeah.
That hasn't been 100% confirmed by the club, but certainly by our good friend James Pearce from the Liverpool Echo, who's been on this podcast several times and is the guy with his ear to the ground in Liverpool. Alisson Becker is in at Liverpool. The goalkeeper has been signed for Roma for a world record $86 million, which is a world record for a keeper, obviously. And it's long been muted that Liverpool have been in pursuit of him. Some reports had said, James Pearce's report had said, it had gone back as far as Christmas, which would tie in with when Mignolet was dropped and Karius came in to replace him, which set a chain of events that would lead to Karius starting a Champions League final, and we know what happened there. So, I'm excited.
I mean, for all the people who want to say, wow, that's a lot of money to spend on a goalkeeper, I think you have to say that with Liverpool, you get it because of what we just witnessed in the Champions League final.
Yeah, and they haven't had the goalkeeper issue has not been right for 4 or 5 years. I would say when Pepe Reina was sent on loan initially and sent away from the club by Brendan Rodgers and Simon Mignolet was signed, Mignolet still never really made that jersey the undisputed number one jersey, even in the season where they nearly won the title in 13-14. So this has been coming. We've needed to make this signing. And it's a big statement of intent that Klopp, who said previously, well, we don't want to be the team that simply spends all the money to get the players in. Well, you've got Virgil van Dijk, you've bought the goalkeeper, you've bought in Kate as well.
Yeah.
You are.
I feel like that's the one that gets forgotten. Because the Naby Keita one, because of when it went down.
Yeah. We are spending the money.
Absolutely.
Because you have to.
here's what Stuart Robson said. He was on ESPN FC. He was asked if Alisson makes them title contenders.
They're going to have to play really well next season in all areas of the field if they want to challenge Manchester City. But it's certainly that's the one area that they've been lacking for quite some while, Liverpool. If they can get him, and they can probably get one or two other players in, Naby Keita's excellent for them, I think they could be challenging Man City.
Yeah, the only thing that I would kind of take umbrage with there in that statement, look, because of the way Liverpool ended their Champions League campaign, I don't mean losing to Real Madrid. There's no shame in that necessarily. They ended on a high note. Like their run through the Champions League to get to that point. But I don't think you can look at Liverpool and say that goalkeeping was their only real issue last season. I know that they got better when Virgil van Dijk arrived.
They certainly did.
But there's still issues with them. Now you find out that Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain is probably going to be out the entire season, who turned out to be a really pleasant surprise for them as a signing last season when a lot of people, yourself included, I think, didn't really think much of that. I'll be the guy to say this, and it's going to anger Liverpool fans because I feel like I'm doing now what so many people did to Harry Kane, but what Mo Salah did last year was extraordinary. Does he have to do that again in order for Liverpool to keep pace with Manchester City? If the answer is yes, that's asking a lot.
That was an exceptional season, but he has to produce again. I'm not saying he has to produce at that level. You're going to get goals from Mane. You're going to get goals from Firmino. You just are. But he's going to have to be good again. Don't forget, the extent to which he was good last season was incredible. I don't expect him to get to that point again, nor do I think it's absolutely necessary, but we need goals from other parts of the field.
Well, you say it's not absolutely necessary. He did that for you last season, and you weren't close to Manchester City. In fact, you almost missed out on qualifying for the Champions League altogether.
Right, correct.
Yeah.
But there was the...
Well, we're talking about whether or not they can be title contenders.
They have to be with the signings they've made, in my view.
I mean...
You're going to expect goals...
Pump the brakes on Shaqiri. Okay, he had a good World Cup, but
I'm talking look at the spine of the team, Andrew. Look at you've signed the goalkeeper that you've signed, who I know Liverpool put a hurting on him in the Champions League semi-final, 7 goals or whatever it was. That's not what I'd focus on. I'd focus on his performances, particularly when I believe Atletico were the visitors. He had an unbelievable game in Rome.
Yeah, he's
that
Brazil's
night.
Number one. I mean, that says something.
Virgil van Dijk. Then you've got a midfield with Keita where, I mean, if he is what people are saying he is, that's going to be a key component in that midfield, which I've never thought has been 100%. And then you've got the front three as well. I'm not talking about Shaqiri. I'm talking about this team as the pieces have been added to it. Plus, you know, fourth isn't going to be good enough anymore. With that amount of money spent, huge amount of money since in this calendar year alone, facilitated in part by the selling of Coutinho. But we have to be in contention. If not now, when?
A couple other ones to quickly mention here. Obviously, Chelsea are making moves. They did officially fire Antonio Conte and moved quickly to bring in Maurizio Sarri of Napoli. Jorginho followed close behind. So I think positive steps for them moving on quickly from the Conte era.
Sarri spoke today about wanting to upgrade the attack. Because, I mean, obviously Jorginho is a midfielder.
Well, it's going to be...
Jorginho and Kante together in midfield is going to be potentially an awesome midfield.
It certainly is. But if they do lose Eden Hazard, which it sounds like Sarri... I was reading that he obviously is going to do all he can to keep him.
He wants to talk to them.
But he also seems like he's in no hurry. Maybe he's just giving Hazard his space right now. I don't know.
Also,
exactly, but that could be... I don't know if I want to say a devastate. Well, yeah, that could be a devastating blow.
It's huge because Manchester City have picked up Riyad Mahrez, so there's no option to go and try and get a similar type of player in him. I mean, Riyad Mahrez is not as good as Eden Hazard, but I'm just saying that late point in the transfer window, you have to act quickly. But he probably doesn't want to chase Hazard too much and force him into a position where there's a standoff early in this process. Hazard's on vacation right now after the World Cup. But, and straight away, Sarri has to answer questions about past indiscretions on the sideline at Napoli, where he used a homophobic slur and spoke to a woman reporter in not great terms.
So. Not the kind of questions you want to be answering in your first week on the job.
No, but he's a very interesting character in the way he came up through football, so we're going to have to talk about him pretty soon.
Should we give it another spin?
Yes.
And, oh, Jose Mourinho.
Yeah.
Is he one of our guests that are on the line here?
No, unfortunately not.
That would have been quite a thrill.
But everything is really bad.
Obviously, facility is fantastic, organization fantastic. UCLA is almost home for me. First time here was 2004. But very bad that I have no players to work. Next week will come De Gea, Matic and Fred, which is good, especially for Fred, new player to be with us. But everything is really bad. And then we go to the UK and we have to play Premier League. Premier League and broadcasters, they were not nice to us by giving us the Friday match, which even complicate more things. So honestly, I'm worried.
See, this right here is why post-World Cup is annoying. And look, I've actually grown to enjoy him and appreciate his act.
Right.
But, like, we just are right back to, like, just the same old Jose manufacturing excuses. I don't know, man. Everything is really bad.
Now, like, look, Alexis Sanchez should be, because of his non... participation in the World Cup should be available for them, and he's not because he has visa problems. So he can't be in the United States right now. Sanchez accepted a 16-month suspended jail sentence in Spain earlier this year for tax fraud. What is going on in Spain? Like, I don't get it. Which has led to this problem. No one found guilty of fraud can be granted a visa to enter the US, although a waiver scheme does exist. It is understood United are trying to use it to allow the Chile international to travel at some point. That's from Sky. So one of his key players that is available isn't even available. So I understand his frustrations to a point. But to begin on such a sour note already with the media, to just, everything is really bad. And then to complain that the Premier League is happening.
And the schedule making, playing on the first Friday, like, it's hard. I can see you complaining about playing on a Friday when you're coming off a midweek match, which would never happen, or just the fact that, you know, if you played the previous weekend, you've had, what are we talking about? Like, they'll have had 4 weeks essentially of just like gearing up for that game. You can't really complain about fatigue or not having had enough time to train when we're talking about a month,
right,
of build up to that. And it's just, this is, nah, I got nothing else on this one, I'll be honest.
Well, Juventus won't have Ronaldo. He's not going to play in the ICC.
No.
Okay. So, you know, there's other teams are going to be affected by a World Cup year, by a World Cup season. You have to just adjust your preseason accordingly. You're also getting back, you know, a world champion in Paul Pogba. And Mourinho is already talking about, well, you know, he's got to show that form for us. He's not happy. We've heard this before from him. He loves UCLA, but... It's the early grumbles of Mourinho, and we have heard this stuff before.
We certainly have. Ready for another spin?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's go. Oh, Craig Burley.
One of our guests.
I suppose this is...
Waiting on the line.
Yeah. Is he... Craig, we've spun the wheel. Your name has appeared. Are you there?
Yeah, just... sitting at home, maybe waiting on your phone call.
Yeah, that's right. Craig, I feel like this World Cup was the tournament where Craig Burley went mainstream. I felt like I heard you on Golic and Wingo almost every day. It was beautiful.
I did a couple of shows. I don't think they were very interesting. Well, they're, first and foremost, Mike and Trey, and I hadn't really met them before, although we live in the same town. I shan't say where it is, just in case, but we live in the same town, but I'd never really met them, even though, as you know, it's such a big campus, so we sort of pass each other, but most people don't know each other, and let's be honest, most people don't care. So I first got to meet them when I went in there, and I think a few of the boys have been on. I think Stevie was on, so Stevie Nicol was on, so I don't know, I'm laughing because I don't know if they understood Stevie. I mean, I'm saying that being Scottish, but he's a little bit, you know, how can I put it? A little bit rougher than me on the accent side of things. So
yeah, he's a bit raw. He's a bit... A bit
he's, still a bit raw after all these years, JJ, so I don't...
Yeah, and you can imagine him down the line with a mouthful of crisps as well.
Yeah, he's got his crisps and he's got his cheese sandwiches and his everything. So, yeah, he was on, Shaq was on. I did a few, which was quite nice, and the guys were great, I have to say. But I think they were more intrigued with the Scottish accent.
Yeah, oh, my. They seemed quite taken with that.
Craig, I was on the radio every weekend on ESPN Radio on the national feed, which is very rare. And without fail, every show. Now, don't get me wrong, the guys were very nice. But without fail, it's as if they'd never heard a person from our part of the world.
Like a circus act.
Yeah.
I know, exactly. And so they got me to read some news out in a Scottish accent, which I did. So I may have embellished it a little bit. But then I started telling stories, because I don't really think they were too interested in whether France were going to beat Belgium, or Japan was going to get through, or if this was a great tournament for England. I don't really think the guys were that interested. But, you know, they've got a slot to fill, and, you know, sometimes like everything else, you know, it gets a bit tedious. So if somebody comes on and tells a few stories and spins a few yarns, they were like, Bog, stay longer, you know. So I was like,
yeah.
I was telling a few stories, trying to, you know, a few anecdotes and stuff like that. And it was fun, but they enjoyed it. I think they enjoyed it, but it was a little bit. I've got to say, guys, I enjoyed it. They were two really nice guys, but I'm not sure. I bought these tartan hats just in case I ever go back on, because I'm going to get them to read stuff out in a Scottish accent rather than me.
Right, yeah. I honestly feel like if I had been on the TV, or those shows that I was on had been simulcast, they would have expected me turn up in the full leprechaun outfit.
That's what I was going to tell you, JJ, and my mind just slipped there. If you thought I was rambling there, I was, right? Because I did this show, we did this half hour in Golic and Wingo, and I was telling these stories about Gascoigne at work and Scottish people going abroad and blah, blah, blah. And I was generalising, and not every Scottish person is like that. And, you know, it's the same if you're telling a story about Irish or Americans. But I was telling sort of general, and I kept saying, I feel as if I'm generalising about Scottish people here. We're not all bad, and we don't... Anyway, I said, if this ever gets out in Scotland, I says, I'm already kind of persona non grata there in Scotland, because I'm very critical of a lot of the football stuff. I said, if this ever gets out, I'm finished. Anyway, I finished the show, and I got a tweet. I got a tweet from a guy who was in Scotland, not rude, nice enough fella. He sent me a tweet and said, I'm in Scotland, and I listen to ESPN New York every day, and I heard every word you said.
Busted.
Seriously.
Well, Craig, along those lines, we'd actually like you to do this entire interview with an American accent.
Well, whenever I try and do an American accent, it seems as if I come from the deep south.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's the diet of films we got when we were kids growing up that's the only accent we can do.
There's a lot of John Wayne movies. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, let's talk about some of the soccer, because the wheel came up and it came up with your name, and you were on the wheel for a reason, because we enjoy talking soccer with you and we want to get your thoughts on the World Cup and a few other things going on. But start with the World Cup, Craig. France, they're the second youngest team at this tournament. I mean, do you believe now that are we entering like a reign of French dominance here, similar to what we saw from Spain back in the early part of this decade?
No, I don't think so. I think the others will come back. It was a great story. I mean, it wasn't the French panache that we thought we were going to get. And maybe we could have got, because they had the talent to play an even more open game than they did. But it didn't suit them to play that game. And, excuse me, it was very successful to play in the way that they did. So I just think Spain and Germany, if we're talking about the European teams in particular for the next championships in 2 years, Spain, Germany, Italy, Belgium will go away and sort of assess what happened. But, you know, they're in a good position, absolutely, and not just because they won the World Cup, but because, you know, they can leave out Sidibe at right-back, and they can leave out Mendy at left-back, who obviously had these injury problems and might have played, but Pavard and Hernandez come in and did great. Varane's still quite young, so is Umtiti. So it's not really an ageing squad, but I think there's a lot of talent out there, particularly in Europe. If you look at the World Cups and so forth in recent years, and in the European Championships, obviously the European teams, obviously the European Championships, yes, but in the World Cups have been very strong. So there's going to be a lot of competition.
Craig, was this a great tournament as everybody wants to compel everybody to say? Everyone's going around, oh, it was a great tournament, wasn't it? Yeah, great tournament. And I agree with that to an extent, but how can it be a great tournament if France won it in third gear?
I think it was a great tournament, JJ, because there was lots of... Now, we could go back historically, and my memory is not great, because I couldn't even remember a story I was going to tell you 5 minutes ago. And I had to ramble for like 30 seconds till I remembered. So, but we could go back and look at other tournaments, and it's difficult. I personally really enjoyed the tournament because there was a lot of storylines, and there was a lot of things to talk about, and there was a lot of headlines, there was a lot of surprises. And that's why I enjoyed it. I don't think necessarily, you know, it might have been the greatest football event in the world in terms of we saw the greatest passers and the greatest scorers and the great. I don't necessarily think it was that, but we got a hell of a lot of stories. You know, we had, you know, Spain firing their coach less than 48 hours before the tournament. We had Russia, who everybody thought was a dog's dinner, and ended up. Actually, okay, it was a weakish group, but I ended up they did well, and that kind of got the Russian element behind them. The Germans were absolutely bloody hopeless, which was a big surprise to see how bad they were. You know, England had this run; they had the Golden Boot winner, who didn't actually play particularly well, if you assess it, but won the Golden Boot. And the Golden Generation of the Belgians looked as if they were going to do. I mean, there was just so many stories; it was. It just looked like a great tournament. I mean, unfortunately for us, we weren't there. I mean, I was at 2010 and 2014 as a broadcaster, and I don't really remember too many storylines apart from the obvious in 2014, which was Germany v Brazil. But there was so many storylines in this tournament. I think that's what made it something that everybody sat up and talked about.
Craig, coming into this tournament, I feel like it's pretty safe to say Messi, Ronaldo, Neymar, they were pretty much viewed, I think, as the three best players in the world. Does this World Cup that the three of them are coming off of, maybe not so much Ronaldo, but certainly the other two, does it cause you to reassess in any way? Like, do they have to do like damage control and rebuild their reputation in any way at the start of the upcoming league season?
No, I don't think so, Andrew. I think Messi's a circumstance of a messy Argentinian federation. He did look despondent and almost, you know, some might say disinterested at times. But, I think that's... And some of our South American colleagues at ESPN know a lot more about this than me, but it's very fractious down there in Argentina. I didn't like Neymar from the start, just because of all the non. I just hated it. He went to France to PSG to get out of Messi's shadow, and has treated it like some league that is doing him a favour, and some team and some players that are doing him a favour by being there. And he was balancing boots on his head and all the nonsense last year. And he semi-carried that on into the World Cup with all the antics. And I don't think many people found it very appealing, to be honest. And I was glad to see the likes of Coutinho and one or two others, kind of Willian in the Mexico game, overshadowing him. And I think Ronaldo was just he's got Portugal and they're very limited to what they can do. And he did put himself about, and he did look interested, and fair play to him for that. So, I don't really. I think Pogba, obviously, Pogba was one who, you know, we talk about Pogba coming to the fore. Pogba was at the fore, but you know, I think people now, you know, if Pogba had a poor World Cup, Jose Mourinho could have sat back and said, well, listen, even France can't get the best out of Paul Pogba, and Deschamps can't get the best out of him, and I've told you this. So there's kind of a pressure on Mourinho next year to keep Pogba's momentum and what we saw from him in the World Cup going, which was a lot better than what we saw in the Man United shot.
I saw today, Craig, actually, it's funny you bring that up. Jose is already beginning. He's like preemptively laying subtle excuses out there. I guess he's hinting now that he's worried about some of these guys coming back to Manchester United who just played in this World Cup and the physical exertion that it caused. He's kind of setting himself up for, the, I guess, being able to maybe use that as an excuse if things aren't clicking right away. Is that a legit excuse? Like, could Pogba just, like, from this emotional high and how draining it was, I mean, is that a reasonable thing for him to be saying?
No, to be honest, it is reasonable for players to feel fatigued. If I go back to my days at Celtic, when we reached the World Cup in 98, so there was a bunch of Scottish lads obviously went to France, but there was also a bunch of European lads, Scandinavians and whatnot, in our Celtic team. And I guarantee you, if memory serves me right, around about October time the following season, there was a good 50 to 70% of those boys, including myself, on the treatment table who had picked up injuries, because you played a long season, you did all the stuff at the end of the season, you prepared for the World Cup, you played in the World Cup, you got very little rest and you were back at pre-season. So it is a legitimate worry for managers, and the rest factor is huge, which is why I think we won't see a lot of these players coming for the ICC, international friendlies in America. As you know, all the big teams come across, and I think disappointingly this year, but you know, understandably, most of those guys will not be here. Some of them might be, but I think most of them won't, and it will be for that very reason.
Last one for me on the World Cup, Craig. England. So I'm kind of conflicted. Obviously, getting over the psychological barrier that was penalty kicks is kind of a major thing to do, considering the, you know, they're a very prevalent thing in a World Cup, and England hadn't been able to get over that hump in terms of penalty kicks. So they achieved that. And they got to a semi-final, whatever you say. But if you go back and look at the route to that semi-final, I'll just give you my feeling. I'll get your reaction to it. My feeling at the end of the England-Croatia game was that I know it was later in the competition when England were eliminated, but I don't feel like a ton has changed. Now, obviously, it's not an embarrassing defeat like Euro 2016 to Iceland, but I still feel some of the old problems remain for England at major tournaments. What's your take on that?
Absolutely, JJ. Probably one of the few Scotsmen. I quite enjoyed England's story. I lived there for 25 years. Most of my friends are English. I don't have an issue with England. I wouldn't say I wanted them to win the World Cup, but
no.
I didn't mind them getting to the final and being beaten by France. I didn't sit there. In fact, I wanted them to go through against Colombia, for example, because some of the Colombian nonsense was sort of getting on my nerves. But the one thing I would look at with England, I thought it was a great story, but not great performances, and that's the way I would look at it from them. So they got a route to the semi final. They took advantage of it, and it was a wonderful story, and their recent history, which has been poor. You know, as you mentioned, losing to Iceland, finishing bottom of the group in Brazil, that included Costa Rica, Uruguay, Italy, finished rock bottom. Roy Hodgson survived. Don't know how. So I think it was a great story. The FA built some great rapport with the media. Gareth Southgate is a guy that I know, and he's a humble, genuine guy, but I do think the flaws were there in the big moment, and that's something to look at. For example, the Croatia game, when it was turning against him, every substitution he made, up until I think the Vardy substitution, was a like-for-like sub. He changed a wing-back for a wing-back, a striker for a striker, and a holding midfielder for a holding midfielder. But clearly it needed a change of shape, because the two full-backs for Croatia were getting too much room, and it ended up being a five at the back for England, and that meant they got overrun in midfield. So there was lots of things that they could have. And people would say, oh, well, Croatia were just the better team. Well, yeah, they might have been the better team, but still, tactically, at that point, he got it wrong. He stuck with what he'd done for like 18 months, but it clearly needed change, JJ, and he didn't. And I blame his coaches as well, because he's got guys next to him that are getting paid by the FA to say, listen, you need to make changes here. And nobody said to him, you need to make a tactical change. It was just like for like. So there was lots of things that went wrong late on. Lots of things went right. But for me, it was a great story, as I said, but it wasn't great performances. And so I think the mood has changed, but the narrative, I don't think has changed greatly.
Craig, Eden Hazard is coming off a great tournament, I thought, for Belgium. And now it seems like in transitioning back to the Premier League, he may become the greatest soap opera of the next few weeks. In terms of Chelsea, I mean, if he bolts for Real Madrid or wherever, are they, you know, for a club that already struggled last year, are they like potentially lost without him? Or do you think the new addition of Sarri and Jorginho coming in, could they survive that?
I don't think they lost, but I mean, if I was Eden Hazard, why wouldn't I move? It's time to go. I mean, he's been there, I think 5 or 6 years. The whole thing is changing there. The ball game is changing at Chelsea. There's an owner who is not putting the money in that he once was. He's got issues with the stadium. He's got issues with his own situation with the government. He's sacking managers for fun. I get it still. And they're not in the ballpark. We're seeing some stories today about Liverpool spending money again, and we know Manchester United and we know Man City will spend money. Chelsea were always in that, and I think I talked to you about this before, guys. Is Chelsea were always, sort of, in recent history, blowing these teams out of the water. Probably 75-80% of the time. It's not happening now. It's not happening. It's rarely happening. So there might never be a more difficult time in the last 15 years for a manager to come into Chelsea who's not actually competing with Liverpool, with United, with City. And why would you stay if you were a top player that Real Madrid wanted you? I think it's time for Eden Hazard to go. I think Courtois might go as well, and it would be concerning. But, you know, that's the way it is, and Chelsea have built their recent foundations on Roman Abramovich. And when he decides it's time to scale down, then the reality kicks in.
Craig, I'm curious about something. Are you finding it difficult, because I am, to transition from this World Cup back into Premier League talk when, it's, you know, a lot of people are asking me about these friendly games coming up both here and back at home. And I don't know, it's as if when you've done this for so long, you kind of, it's hard to raise the enthusiasm. And I get it for some people. Like, I was at the Champions League final to see Liverpool play. And I understand why someone over here would want to go and see them play. But right now, I'm just in a period where, like, transfer talk is tedious. These friendlies are tedious. I just want the season to get started. Do you have the same struggles that I have at this time of year?
I've got them 24/7, 365 days a year. I can tell you that now. But I'll give you a quick story on something like that. I was a few years ago with Jim Proudfoot, my colleague in the UK. Jim is a commentator,
yeah,
as you know. And we were doing... We got dispatched to do the Milan Derby back in the day when Mourinho was at Inter and Milan was still flying. And we went over there to the San Siro for ESPN UK and we did the commentary. And it was absolutely one of the best derbies I've ever been to. I mean, the whole place was rocking. And I was flat. I was like, and I've, you know, been lucky enough to do a lot of big games, but I thought, this is amazing, just the atmosphere.
Mm.
First time doing a derby in Italy, the Milan Derby. And then the next day, my assignment was Hamilton Academicals versus Motherwell.
Oh, my God.
So I absolutely know how you feel, because I was like, I came out for that and I got on a flight and I flew to Scotland and I thought, I don't want to do this. I can't do it. How can I go from doing that to doing that? And it is, JJ, it is a feel. I know it is difficult sometimes, and it's, you know, it does take the season to kick in for you to get back into the swing of things.
Yeah, no, that's exactly the way I feel. And I'm doing strange things now. Like, for example, yesterday I was on Rangers Twitter listening to Steven Gerrard's post-match comments after a 0-0 preliminary round Europa League game against FK Shupki in Macedonia. And I'm like halfway through and I'm listening intently and then I'm like, what am I doing? Like, is my search for meaningful competitive soccer so So like, I don't get it. It just feels like a weird time of the year. And, you know, you don't want to wish your life away, but you almost wish you were in, like, the middle of October when the games really matter.
Yeah, absolutely. But we all need a break. And yeah. Everybody's different. I'm quite good that way because I can switch off.
Right.
Because a lot of people don't understand, you know. A lot of people say to me, how can you not be watching that game? And how can you not be? And I say, well, I can switch off. And I can rely on, you know, memorising stuff or watching stuff later or whatever. But I'm very good at switching off and getting away from it. I don't need to soak myself.
Right.
And a bath of soccer, you know, I really don't need to do that. So, for me, it's quite easy. For others, it's, you know, it's slightly more difficult.
Well, we're going to let you switch off right now, because that's about it. Thanks so much, man.
Well, I'm going to go and listen to Steven Gerrard on Twitter.
I know, I couldn't believe I was doing that. I was like, and that's not me. That's not me because I'm mad interested in something. It's like, it's kind of like, is this what I should be doing? And it, I don't know, I think there's too much football now. It's just too much.
This could be the first time I've ever come on here where you've not mentioned Liverpool. Is that because you're getting a bit excited about what may be happening at Liverpool this year and you're playing it down?
Do you know what? We're about to break the world record transfer for a goalkeeper, right? We've bought in the midfield that we're supposed to have needed in Keita, Fabinho. We've got Shaqiri, so, you know, for example, if Chamberlain's out for a year, it probably won't matter. We've probably got an upgrade there, and we've got that front three again. So you're dead right. You're absolutely right. I'm nervous because if you go on Liverpool Twitter now, and I wouldn't advise you to, that's all you. Surely we're title contenders now. I've heard this for 28 years. 28 years since we last won it, and it's, I don't want to jinx myself, to be honest.
Well, it's certainly not for the lack of trying from the Fenway group at the moment. It seems to be backing Mr. Klopp, and financially at the moment he seems to be getting the backing of the owners, which is great. And I don't know, but it could be another great story this year.
Oh, I hope so.
I don't know, but with Liverpool and Man City and maybe one or two others going head to head, could be fascinating.
Put it this way, fourth isn't going to be good enough anymore.
Absolutely.
Good stuff, man. We'll catch up soon. Thanks, Craig.
All right, boys. Cheers.
All right. Thanks to Craig, who was just patiently sitting by his phone and waiting for the wheel to spin, and he got lucky. I saw Gianni Infantino's name is also on this wheel. Is he really just waiting?
Yeah, we left him waiting.
Well, I kind of hope that he comes up here. Oh, nope. It just passed it. No, it lands on Help a Fan.
2018-2019 Premier League season Help a Fan. Many people have been requesting this. It is open once again. Well, I say it's
no,
open.
No, not yet. We haven't come up with our list of questions yet. We have to re-explain it to everyone.
Well, we should explain it to people. So what we do is we come up with a very scientific list of questions, which it's almost like a Rorschach test for what Premier League club you should support. Andrew makes up these amazing questions. They're deeply, deeply psychological. Mm-hmm. And from that, we deduce, when you answer it, who you should support in the Premier League. And usually what we do is we post it on Twitter. And
the questions will be posted. They'll be pinned on top of our Twitter page once they've been completed. And then we ask you to submit your answers to those questions as an iTunes review. Hopefully that makes sense.
Yeah. But we have to come up with the questions first.
Yep,
but
they're not there yet.
But to those who have been asking, yes, Help a Fan is happening. So tell your friends, tell your family, tell everybody you know that is looking to basically adopt a team that you must. Oh, by the way, the rules are you must follow this team forever. So if we give you a relegation bound team,
which happened to many people the first time we did this with Newcastle.
Oh, we gave Newcastle to many, many people and they duly went down. But it was only for a season.
We gave Stoke to my buddy's girlfriend.
That's right.
Yeah, that didn't end well. Ready for one last spin?
Why not?
Would you look at that? Right on MLS.
Which we have been neglecting throughout the World Cup.
I would like to take exception with that.
Actually,
I don't care for your use of the word we. I have tried to include an MLS item in all of my red cards or man of the
match. That's true.
And I have been absolutely butchered by you for it. So please remove the word we.
I have been neglecting
MLS. MLS. So I guess the big items that need discussing, obviously, the managerial changes that have occurred
right. Since
we were last here. Both New York clubs have new managers, and both New York clubs are still in decent position. NYCFC sits second right now, 1 point behind Atlanta United FC, while the Red Bulls are currently third, but they've played two fewer games than NYC and three fewer games than Atlanta.
Yeah, Patrick Vieira leaving, I thought he'd finish he'd finish out this season, and you could definitely think that his ambition would be to go back to Europe. The job comes up at Nice, that's where he is. It's a big jump for him. Most commentators believe he's done a good job in MLS without really excelling in the postseason, but I mean, on the regular season, he's done well.
Well, that's
no doubt. He's transitioned out of the older players and into a younger team that's more, I guess, in his vision of what he wanted to do. For it to happen mid-season and for him to take all his staff is kind of hurtful to NYCFC fans. I understand it, but that's just the way it is. You could never have expected him to stay there forever. Jesse Marsh, again, he'd become the face of that team, really. I thought he'd done an excellent job there in the transition from Mike Petke. And again, without really doing what those Red Bull fans long for them to do, is to bring back MLS Cup to Harrison, New Jersey. And he's going to take an assistant manager's role at RB Leipzig. Which some people have read is a bit... it's not like they would have felt better if he was going to to be the head coach, but that's just not the case.
It's a stepping stone to greater ambition.
And that's why he's done it, obviously. You could see Marsh back. If things don't work out, it's more of an internal appointment, whereas Vieira has left the City Football Group. Marsh has not left the Fizzy Drink Group.
It's actually been a good stretch for them. I mean, if you look back at the last several matches for the Red Bulls, 3-0 over Dallas, 1-0 over Toronto. Then, unfortunately for them, they had the loss in the New York Derby to NYCFC 1-0, which is a rarity in the way that rivalry's gone. But they bounced back and they beat Sporting Kansas City 3-2. So it's been a nice run for them during what could have been a tumultuous time. So I think if you're a Red Bull fan, if you can get past the NYCFC loss, which, knowing Red Bull fans, that is not an easy thing to do. There's a lot. It's a new rivalry, but there's so much trash talk and pride involved in it. If you can get past that, I think you can see that this has been a solid stretch for your team.
Chris Armas comes into the job for Red Bulls. You know, he's been around the team for a long time. He knows the run of things. I won't say it's a seamless transition, because Marsh's voice was synonymous with that group, and I'm sure in the locker room a lot of players will you know, it's a transition for them to hear a new voice, albeit someone they know. So that's kind of smooth for them, and NYCFC have appointed from within their club as well. So I guess, as far as mid-season managerial changes goes, both clubs have handled it as well as they possibly could.
Yeah, and I do want to make a mention again of Toronto FC, because a couple weeks ago they were my red card because they still hadn't switched on, and even since then they still haven't switched on. Since I gave them that red card, that was after the Red Bulls beat them 1-0, I believe. They lost to Minnesota 4-3, drew with Sporting Kansas City, and lost to Orlando. I mean, now they're no longer in the basement of the Eastern Conference because DC United have, well, a couple things. DC haven't been good, but also Toronto have played four more games. DC United have played, this is our problem with MLS, is the scheduling. DC United have played 15 games. Atlanta have played 21. Like, how do you even judge where these teams are? So Toronto have four more games at hand that they've played over DC. So Toronto have to be looked upon as the worst team right now in the Eastern Conference. And you can start talking about them as being San Jose have also been offensively bad.
Yeah. The only thing I will say is that if you're looking for bright sparks, like even in a defeat away at Orlando at the weekend, I mean, Giovinco missed a sitter at the end to tie it up 2-2. They have been creating chances, at least. They were coming up against a team that was looking to snap a long unbeaten or non-winning streak in terms of Orlando as well. So That's the next point I wanted to talk about. So Jason Christ is gone as well.
Yeah.
And in comes an Irish manager, James O'Connor, who had done such good work at USL side St. Louis. And here he is now in the hot seat for Orlando. He was actually a man of the match for me when they won the, I think it was the 2016 USL Championship. So good to see an Irish manager in there. And we simply have to have him on the show.
And while we're on the topic of MLS, I guess we got to mention Wayne Rooney's debut and the Audi Stadium's debut. Rooney's debut went slightly better than that of the stadium's, but then again, what could Rooney have possibly done to make his debut worse than that of the stadium? There were fan protests because of a ticketing controversy for two of the three DC United fan groups.
Right.
So that obviously was an unpleasant scene. And then even more unpleasant than that was a metal railing of the stadium falling down and hitting the DC United sideline reporter in the head, causing her to have to leave the game, obviously, and seek medical attention. Then there were pictures taken around the stadium of other railings that they then became nervous about with duct tape keeping them up.
Which is just unnerving. Such a bad optic.
Yeah. Rooney did have an assist in the game. For whatever that is worth, but a new era for DC United. I know right now they, because of the way it started for the stadium, they become a bit of an easy target, a punching bag right now. But it, I say a new era, I do mean that. I do really believe it's important for one of these banner clubs of the league to finally be playing in a stadium that I think they're really proud to be in. Say what you want about Wayne Rooney and his time at Everton, but I can envision him succeeding in this league and doing good things for this club. So,
and the assist, but we don't know what Wayne Rooney's going to be, and we don't know what physically he's going to be like in this league. But even the assist for the goal, Andrew, you could have made that pass. It was pretty much all Paul Arriola's own ability to strike a ball from distance. So there's a lot of questions unanswered. And most people like the stadium in terms of not obviously falling debris, but
right,
in
once
terms
they
of
figure that out.
Yeah. It's a pretty big caveat. And finally, on the MLS front, this podcast has become a home to the Mike Petke outburst. And
he's tremendous.
Yeah,
Oh.
Well, let's listen to this latest one.
You want to set this up?
This is after RSL's weekend game. Where he was pretty upset about an incident during the game and decided to again have a go at referees in MLS.
The only thing I get from MLS is stop criticizing the referees. I want to know where the referees are right now. Why can't we ask the referee a question? Why can't we do that? Why can't we ask, why didn't you go to VAR? Why didn't you call that? Why, when the studs are coming up, you just give a yellow card? That would make them more human. It would be better to MLS. It would be better for this league, for the fans, for the owners, for the coaches, for the players, to hear from them and to hear their side of the story. And perhaps then we say, okay, I see it. Maybe it happened a little fast. You know, maybe the guy in the booth, wherever the hell he is watching this, you know, maybe he was watching The Simpsons at the same time. I don't know. I have no idea. But it's not good enough to me. And I'll take the fine. Jeff Agus, fine me. Find me. I don't care anymore. You know, nobody else, no other coach in this league steps up a little more than they should. I'm going to. So drain my bank account. I don't give a shit anymore. Okay?
He's a gem, man. He's so fun. Real quick on that. Look, I totally get his frustration because there is something to the stakes for an MLS manager, player. When they get things wrong, they're held accountable. They have to answer for those things. The media are there waiting for them. Shows like this are there ready to pounce on them. They do have to answer it. What I would say to that, though, is with a referee, for one, I don't know that they're paid enough to have to go through the same sort of abuse from the media that players and managers are.
Right.
And on top of that, too, you know, I love that when Mike Petke says, if we had the chance to hear from them, you know, maybe I'd say, oh, okay, it was moving a little fast. I could see that. No, you wouldn't say that. That's the thing. When you're making an argument here, you'll say that. But in the moment, you would say, well, that's unacceptable. Jobs are on the line here. You got to do better. And then if it happens again, you'd say, it's the second time with this guy where he says it was too fast for him. We got to get someone else in there. This guy can't do the job. Yeah, the referees, if they were forced to answer to the media for calls that we can clearly see after the game were wrong calls, what are they going to say? Like, what can they possibly say? A manager can explain away a decision by saying, well, we thought, you know, if we did this, it would cause this. A referee can only say, yeah, I saw the replay. It was wrong. I messed up. Like, what do you, I know maybe it would make him feel better to hear that, but what is it really accomplishing to just go out there and allow these guys to just embarrass themselves?
Right. And, well, just to update you, MLS have obviously...
Jeff A. Goose did follow through with Mike Petke's challenge.
This was their statement slash piece on it on MLSsoccer.com. Following his ejection and widely circulated post-game criticism, which I think probably irked them more than anything, of match officials on Saturday, Real Salt Lake head coach Mike Petke has been suspended an additional game and fined $10,000 by MLS Commissioner Don Garber. The extra game suspension was for on-field conduct during the match against Minnesota, on top of the automatic one-game suspension as a result of being ejected from the game. Petke will serve his suspensions during RSL's matches on July 21st against the Rapids and 28th against San Jose Earthquakes. Additionally, RSL have been issued a $10,000 fine for social media posts from the club's official Twitter handle that endorsed and amplified Petke's comments. This is his third disciplinary action against Petke in total, twice for public criticism of officials and once for improperly interacting with game officials. Here's where I'm going to go a little bit different on this one. And it's hard to know, again, how well RSL are doing. They're in fifth, which is well inside the playoff zone, but they've played 20 games. Portland are in fourth and they've played three less.
Yeah, this is what we're saying.
Yeah, they've won 9 games, lost 9 games. They're on 29 points. We hear a lot of this from Petke. It's been a kind of theme since he's gone to RSL. These outbursts, whether it be about the way... Remember that whole thing, that mea culpa thing he did last season, where he was like, I apologise to the fans, I apologise to the owners, I apologise to my direct boss. Like, he apologised to everyone, literally everyone. And you're like, at some point... The show's got to stop and you got to start winning some games and making this team really good again. And I don't know, man. Some of the time, I often thought in his time at the Red Bulls, particularly when I started going to like the press conferences and watching the press conferences, that he was a bit of an emotional guy, maybe a bit too emotional.
So there you go. That was our first...
Football.
Our first Wheel of Football AWC after World Cup.
Yeah, and there was, apart from, I guess, the MLS talk, there was very little football in there, actual football.
Our thanks to Craig Burley for joining us on this podcast. Always one of our favorite people to speak with. I should say, actually, before we get out, JJ, I can't believe I almost forgot this. JJ, hymns.
Oh, Lord.
I know. My goodness. JJ, 66% of men lose their hair by age 35.
That's crazy.
What's crazy is that you're trying to play off that up there on your head as a head of hair. That's a toupee, and we all know it.
It's all my own hair.
If you had been on Hims early on, you wouldn't be wearing that rug right now. The thing is, when you start to notice hair loss, it's too late. It's easier to just keep the hair that you have rather than replace the hair that you've lost. So I ask you, do you want your hairline to recede, or do you want to do something about it first? That's what I thought. 4hims.com, a one-stop shop for hair loss, skin care, and other wellness supplements for men. Thanks to science, baldness can be optional. Hims connects you with real doctors and medical grade solutions to treat hair loss. Well-known generic equivalents to name brand prescriptions to help you keep your hair. No snake oil pills, no gas station counter supplements, no waiting room. That's right, no awkward doctor visits. Save hours by going to 4hims.com. Just answer a few quick questions, and a doctor will review it, and he'll prescribe something for you. Products are shipped directly to your door. So here you go. This is how you do it. Order right now. Listeners to this podcast get a trial month of Hims for just $5 today, right now, while supplies last. So don't wait. See website for full details. This would cost you hundreds of dollars if you went to a doctor or a pharmacy, but uh-uh. Listeners to this podcast, $5. Go to 4hims.com/offside. That's FORHIMS.com/offside. 4hims.com/offside. Maybe I'll get you some Hims.
I mean, you've just slandered my hair, which is my own hair. How dare you?
Allegedly.
Well.
Allegedly. Hey, we're back.
Yeah.
We're back. We need to readjust. This is like in Austin Powers when he comes out of being cryogenically frozen and he has to go through the reanimation process. That was kind of this podcast. You know, like when he's standing there urinating for about 4 minutes. Like, that's kind of what this podcast was.
Certainly not our best work. But it was fine.
we got through it. We're coming through to the other side now. Next week, we'll have another podcast out. We'll start to get more into some of these transfer rumors. We'll see what's going on with Eden Hazard, because I said to Craig, I think that's going to be kind of the big name to keep an eye on during the course of this transfer period.
When you think about the amount of time he spent at Chelsea, he doesn't really owe them anything.
No, certainly not. You wouldn't think so. But I have a feeling their fans would beg to differ, because they have ambition, and they should.
Sure.
They should want to keep him. He's an amazing talent. Hey, we'll do it again next week. We're getting there. We're working our way back. This was fun. To you, I say,
take you later, fun boy.
I'll see you later.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.